Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not.
As you may guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show.
Today we have a guest. Our guest is Steven Rivera. Steven Rivera, also known as a Mindful Wizard. He is a public speaker, author, and teacher. He is the author of Musical Clues, which can be found on lulu.com, and I'll post a note on the description below. Moreover, he has a huge following on Instagram as well as TikTok. You can find him also on Facebook under Mindful Wizard. And I will put all of his links underneath the description on the video here. And I also like listening to his podcast, which you can find on Anchor. And also I prefer listening to it on Spotify, but I will post the link of Anchor, which has different platforms where you can find his podcast. So you will enjoy hearing Steven's wisdom as much as I do. I love hearing all his candid talking he has by himself or to the audience, and sometimes interviewing other people. And I'll post a description on that. So with that said, welcome the Mindful Wizard, Steven Rivera, to the show. Welcome, Steven.
Thank you very much, Zen. That was an incredible introduction. I appreciate your time and your energy. So thank you very much for having me.
Thank you as well. So please tell us a bit about who you are and what brings you joy.
That's a great question. So my name is Steven Rivera. I am a teacher, a reader, an author, a student, a son, a lover. I'm a little bit of everything. And to answer your question, what brings me joy is manifesting my dream life in real time and teaching others how to live authentically. I want to see people smile, and I want to see people let their guard down. That's my goal. I like to see people live happily.
Nice. And this is my first time seeing you, well, not in person, but over camera, but I see you, well, I guess not the first time, but let's say first time communicating on camera, but I've seen your videos. And as you say, I can feel the letting your guards down kind of a thing, because let's say if we never spoke, let's say if you never responded to me, by the way, I was shocked you responded to me. I was like, oh my God, a celebrity responding to me. I felt so honored. Like, yeah. And you took your time to respond to people. And so I felt that. I felt relaxed, and on your videos, you actually, with me, probably a lot of people as well, I feel my guards down and I'm relaxed to hear you out. And it's kind of like we're having a conversation, even though you're talking, but I feel like as you're talking on the videos, I'm listening and I'm having my own responses, kind of a thing. So yeah, that's great. So why a mindful wizard?
That's a good question. So I want to thank you for noticing that when I do speak, I try to create an informal conversation. I don't want to speak at anyone. I want to speak with people. I want people to feel engaged. And I like to simplify the message because spirituality can get really confusing. So I do my best to keep it simple and follow. But why Mindful Wizard? When I grew up a little in a rough neighborhood in Brooklyn, and I felt like I didn't have positive male role models that were similar to my age range and that looked like me. So growing up, it was almost like, are you going to be a gangster or are you going to be a student? And I chose the bad route. And fast forward, I realized that that's not the life that I wanted to live. I was living a lie. So I tell people all the time that I'm blind from this side right here, my eye. And I was attacked when I was about 18, and that triggered me. Like, I had to wake up. I had 8 surgeries. I was very unhappy. And I started to make small changes. And as I did that, I elevated my game and I started reading more spiritual books. And I got into meditation heavily to fight the depression because I was losing sight in my eye. So I'm officially blind from my left eye. And in order to cope with that loss, I needed to become a new version of myself. And that's the beginning of the process for Mindful Wizard. Yes, wow. Sir.
That's beautiful. Would you say, and I think you'll understand what I mean, when I say the word God, I don't mean it in the way that culturally, like religiously kind of a thing. And so, but I'm going to ask you a question. You know that word when they say God works in mysterious ways. And in hindsight, would you say, and you can tell me what you think, what would you say losing sight on the left eye was a gift in a sense for you to wake up? What do you think? You can tell me what your process thought was.
I think that is so spot on that I am happy that you asked. I think it was the greatest gift ever. I look back and I reflect on where I would have been. And I'm going to be very blunt with you and your audience.
Yeah,
can
totally.
I curse? Or,
yeah, can we curse? Yeah, this is a raw podcast. You can curse. However, if it's not YouTube worthy, I will bleep it. But you still have the freedom to say it. I don't want you to feel like, you know, but you can say it, yes.
Gotcha. So I'll keep that in the back of my mind. But I wouldn't say that I was the best version of myself, right? Growing up, I was very ungrateful. I have both parents. My parents have worked very hard. We have a house, right? Why am I ungrateful? And I think that incident where I lost sight woke me up and it detached me from the false personality of pretending to be a gangster, quote unquote. And what I started to do was get around people that actually cared about me and I didn't have to pretend anymore. So when I let that guard down, I was like, yo, I'm really an artist. I'm a writer. Like, why am I outside trying to hurt people when I want to write books and I want to laugh? And, you know, so I struggled as a male in a predominantly Spanish environment, right? It was like, you had to be the tough guy and you couldn't cry. And it was like, that's old. And that never applied to me. I was very into creating with my hands and writing. So I would say that it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me was the awakening, because it literally changed. I became a teacher. We've spoken. And I told you, I started teaching in the jails. So that really changed my life. It made me grateful for what I was doing and for my voice. And I started to use it differently.
Nice. I think many people who are aware of things will know that most growth happens on your lowest part or lowest situation of your life. And we use those words for descriptions, but I know you already know that life is just life. There isn't such thing as lowest or highest. We just, things happen and how you see it is how you respond to it, et cetera. And I've spoken to so many people, and I actually have my friend who does my music, and he's blind on both eyes.
Wow.
And, yeah. And he's the most amazing. We never met in person. He lives in Jordan, but he's the most amazing person that I've ever met. And when I speak to him, like, I feel like he's there and I want to hug him and I love him so much. And he said, without even bringing that up or even without even saying anything, he says being blind was the greatest gift he ever received. And I'm like, but living in the Western world, we don't hear those things much. In my perception, maybe you hear different things. In the Western world, from what I've noticed, people is, woe me, I'm a victim, they did this to me, take care of me, poor me, kind of a thing. So I've seen. And seeing my friend and talking to other people who I've raised from the, if I could say, gutter to inspire. And like some of my gurus, like Susie Orman, like knowing her story and hearing your story now, and so many other people. And my friend, he does, I don't even still know how he does music with both eyes blind. I will send him a music and he brings something back to me within the week. And it's like mind blowing. And so I tell myself and I tell people, the sky's not even the limit. There is no limit being anything, because if the person who invented this camera thought there was a limit, we would not have a camera, basically. Because this was a dream 100 years ago, possibly. So that's a beautiful, inspiring story. And of course, in the words, unfortunately, this happened, but also fortunately, you are where you are now, and you still have part vision and you're healthy, I assume. And I totally, presumably, think you're healthy mentally, definitely. So that's good. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah, and the platform is to share basically anything that's taboo, shocking, raw truth, because as of 2020, even before I started that, but 2020 helped me to stop bullshitting myself, period. Stop the bullshit. We all know we got shit, but we're afraid to let people know it, and we're afraid to share it, acting like we're all, but we're not. And if we all share our manure, we can help each other grow flowers.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, totally. So can you tell us the difference between mindful and mindful?
Oh, that's a good one. So going back to the point that you made about the Western culture, I would say that that's being mindful, right? M-I-N-D-F-U-L-L. Our minds are constantly looking for attachment, love, what we think is love, ego, materialistic mm-hmm. gain. Whereas the opposite would be mindful. And that's what I've become or working to become. It's this state of fully being present, immersed in what you're doing. Right now, nothing exists. It's me and Zen and I. And that is mindfulness in action. So what we do at Mindful Wizard is we take the person wherever they're at spiritually, and we help them develop mindfully. We push them to a point where they use their thoughts to their advantage, where the anxiety doesn't decide who they become, where similar to the 19-year-old me, where I was being pulled by a false sense of reality. So to answer your question with another level, I would say a lot of us pretend, similar to what you're saying about the manure. But if we just bring the truth out, then we can really build together. I can't be myself if I'm pretending, because tomorrow I may not remember who I was pretending to be.
And you be yourself and inspire other people. Because I can only speak about it because I've gone through it too. And being able, going through it and ready to, being ready to be like, okay, I'm done with this shit. Then I'm able to see other people. But yes, being in that bullshitting, then I'm not seeing other people because I'm not seeing myself.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Talk to him, brother. Let them know, Zen. Let them know, brother. Talk to him, brother.
Totally. So why is being mindful important?
It's a great question. I think we only have roughly 80 years, right, on this planet to enjoy, give or take. And I think a lot of us spend our young years establishing something without really realizing what we're doing. So I like to study people. We're both from New York City. I love to watch people on the train. It is the best example of not being mindful. I sit there and I'm like, why are you in a rush? Where are you in a rush to go? I call that going fast nowhere. And one day people are going to look back, and I hope that our conversation can spark this, at least one thought of where the hell am I going? Why am I in a rush? And am I happy to be there? So when you ask those kind of questions, I think being mindful helps you slow down, and it helps you appreciate these conversations. It helps you build. It helps you look at your relationships. And I love what you said about the mirror, right? If you're purely yourself, then you don't have to pretend. You live. And that is mindfulness, right? You don't have to bring in your trauma, and it doesn't cloud who you become. So I think mindfulness clears that energy and just allows you to experience life for what it is without adding unnecessary baggage.
Yes, definitely. That is awesome. And I think I had to hear what mindful was, and of course, learning what it is and implement it in my life. And when I did, I had to experience it. And I can only speak from my experience, and it's wonderful. And it's something I tell myself and others, it's like brushing your teeth. If you don't do it for a day, it might stink a little, and then the next day will stink more. So you just have to keep, or even showering or doing maintenance for your heart and for your mind. Everything is maintenance. It has to be done routinely for it to be, like they say, second nature or first nature. Even those has to be a practice. Same with when we're walking. If when you were a kid, if you didn't think about it, if you had to think about it and say, okay, I'm done the walking stuff, you probably would not walk anymore. You had to do it so much for you to not even think about it to walk. But let's say if you're losing, I've seen some people who go to rehab. I even had to go to rehab in 2020 about my knee, but it wasn't about learning, well, kind of like learning to walk-ish, because I had inflammation. So to walk, I had to actually think about it and think about what to do. And it was very interesting. And even when that was happening, I was grateful to actually get to the appointment instead of saying, oh no, and thinking the worst. Of course, the worst came in. I was like, oh wow, like, am I going? Because I had a leg issue all my life, especially when I was younger. And I was thinking, oh, am I going to go back into crutches and have, what's the thing? I had correction boots. And so I was like, no, don't think about that crap. I'm going to move forward and fix it because now I'm an adult and this is my responsibility. I'm not a kid anymore who's just whatever. So, and I fixed it with exercise. So something I still have to do because apparently the modern man doesn't exercise enough. Even if you go to the gym or walk to work, it's not enough exercise compared to, let's say, maybe 300 years ago when probably you and I had to find our food literally. Now we call Postmates. I don't call Postmates, but as a society.
Seamless, right?
Yeah, so I had to exercise my legs. And so that's the same thing with being mindful. You have to be mindful, definitely. So who can do the work of being mindful, or the work that you are teaching others to do or talking about? Is it for everyone, or?
I think that mindfulness is something that anyone can tap into. But I love what you said about the practice, because I've gotten to this point with a lot of help from others, and I had to be willing to listen to their feedback. So one of the points that really changed my mindfulness career was a young lady that I'm dating now. And she said to me, "Do you know that you're very anxious?" And I remember saying, "What are you talking about? This is who I am." And she said, no, this is a product of the way you think." So I said, "Wait, what?" She said, "You don't have to be this way." And I started to get into my own anxiety, right? Like you say, the manure. And I was like, no, eat your shit, bro, literally. And I discovered that I was mindful, or that I was not mindful. And once I learned that, I was able to tweak that. So I think, to answer your question, mindfulness can help anyone, but you also have to be real with yourself. And you have to have realistic expectations. For example, if you have a really short fuse and you're fighting all the time, I don't think it is wise to go into mindfulness and say, "By tomorrow, I'm never going to get angry, or I won't be cursing," right? That's unrealistic.
Yep.
But to say something like, "By next month, I'll know what triggers me and I'll know how to respond differently," that is growth. Mm-hmm. I've also taught mindfulness to children at the elementary school level. And I've seen four-year-olds meditate, so I know it's possible. You just have to be patient.
Is it perfectly okay to lay back and not care?
I think I love that question. Because if I may, I've seen that the spiritual community confuses detachment with ego detachment. And I'll explain. Ego detachment is, "Oh, you broke my heart. I don't need you no more," right? Real detachment is, in my opinion, "This is the lesson. We are no longer together. I appreciate the time. I'm going to separate myself because I don't want to get hurt." There's a difference. It's not, "I'm better than you. Leave me the F alone." It's not, "I need to make you jealous." It's not. So I'll give you a better example. You've seen those posts that are like, you've probably seen them, right? They're all over social media. "Oh, I don't need you. I'm the one people chase." When you start talking like that, you're still in ego. And it's difficult, right? Because we all have personalities and we all want to be validated. But at the same time, when you're constantly seeking outside validation, it's actually your ego telling you you're not good enough. And you'll always continue to seek that validation. So what I would say is, if you're going to detach, detach for the purposes of self-love, not detaching for the purposes of "I'm better than you," because then you just get right back into another level of ego trap.
That's important that you said that. And thank you for bringing that up. Definitely. And I did notice in my... Even that word spirituality, I'm working on not to say it or attach to that anymore, but it's a progress thing. I did notice in the beginning how, well, I have a quick background. So my background is, I grew up Jehovah's Witness, where we grew up thinking we're the center of the universe and everyone's gonna die and we're better than people. And when I left, that's the stuff that I was taught. And I know that's not me, but it was like part of me, like your partner said, something you conditioned to be doing. So I was conditioned to think that way. And I had a partner that was saying, not him, but like other people will call me arrogant. I know I am confident because they teach us to be confident and go into people's houses without shame and knock and convert them, etc. But as a human, I didn't know that, but I'm pretty sure I had a arrogance as well, because being a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses who have left, in hindsight, they see that, because the arrogance of like, I'm better than you, and treating, we say we're loving, but we're treating people like still like looking down because you are preferred by God, kind of a thing. And I had to remove that. And then, so it's like, I had that and I had to remove that. And then when I discovered spirituality, I was back on that pattern, because it's kind of like, I think if religion or dogma or those practices got taken out of, if religion and spirituality got separated and people are just spiritual and not religious, as in culture or whatever, all practices, then I think people would actually do this one instead of that one. Because I've noticed, at least for being growing up Jehovah's Witness and watching other religious people of the world, most people are stuck with the religion part and not the spirituality part. So I've noticed, maybe that's why I have this train of thought, because when I separated it myself and went on the spiritual part, I had to basically take out my mask to smell the shit and actually know my trauma and know all my whatevers and make sure I don't make someone else smell my shit, because I had to turn it into flowers. Because as we all know, everything, was it Lily, or there's that flower, the lotus, it's from the swamp or from grossness, and it's beautiful. And so I don't know what the process of the Lord is, but as a person, if you're not saying, okay, this is what's going on, and I'm not excusing my trauma or my bullshit, but I'm going to work on it, but I'm going to be authentic to other people, and you showing that vulnerability, and you show people that, hey, I'm not better than you, and this and that, people will be more attracted toward you, and you're more beautiful. And that's what I had to learn. Instead of a plastic flower with perfume, you're actually a real flower that has vulnerabilities of wilting and regrowing the next season, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of plastic flower that stays perfect forever, but it's fake, kind of a thing. So yeah, I totally get that. What are the five wisdom or motto of being a mindful wizard, if you have five?
Actually, I have 10 written down that I'd like to read for you.
Yes, do it. Yes, please. So, please, thank you.
Like you said, right, we all, to simplify, right, I think religion is a beautiful thing. But taken out of context, we do have the tendency to think we're better than others, right? Spirituality, the same thing. Taken out of context, in opposition of, we still think we're better than anybody. So what I've tended to do was, instead of pretending, you guys get what you get. And if I was rude,
I love the candidness.
Yeah, because there's a reason I want to speak on this, right? And I promise you I'll get to the 10, but there's a man that I keep thinking about, and his name was Mr. Smalls. And it's funny that I talk about him, because in the jails, I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'7". A lot of the teenagers there are 6'5". I'm talking about monsters, right? 200-300 pounds. Yeah, these are not small boys. These are men. Wow. But, you know, they're young. So one day I asked the guard, and I say, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you're very skinny, and you've been doing this job for 30 years. How is it that you haven't been hurt? And he said this to me. He said, Stephen, you're very smart, so I hope you pay attention to what I'm going to say to you. He said, never pretend. He said, because one day you're going to come across a person that doesn't care. And when you pretend, they're going to pull your card, he called it. And if you're lying, they will know and you will be hurt. He said, I never get hurt because I don't pretend to be anybody. This is who I am. And the kids respect it.
And, wow. And
when he said that, I was like, wow. And he's like, and I'm not talking about jail. He's talking about in the bad neighborhoods, in the good neighborhood. This is who he was. And I've grown to kind of model that behavior where I tell people how I feel and we create open relationships. So I think that's a huge piece. Confidence and authenticity go hand in hand. I would say that's wizard idea number one. Another good one I have for the beautiful people listening, and Zen, you've been great to talk to, by the way. Your skin looks perfect on camera.
The light.
Nah, that's you. That's you, man. But I would say number one is don't think, feel. I think a lot of us overthink. We don't feel the moment. We don't enjoy. I can tell you do what I do sometimes. When things resonate, you close your eyes, you experience it, you let it take over. So that's exactly what I'm talking about, right? I want to enjoy this conversation. I don't want to think about saying the right thing. I want to make sure we're vibing, and that's all it comes down to. So don't think, feel is a good one. I would say be nice to yourself. It's simple, but it's not easy to do. Especially when you make mistakes, right? You want to correct it, but you can correct your behavior without being disrespectful to your soul, right? Like, I think that's another valuable piece. I would say some days are harder than others, especially on this entrepreneurship process. One day you're getting 50,000 followers. The next day, nobody likes a video. So stay committed, right? I'll give you two more. I would say this one's one of my favorites though. Less shoulds and more acceptance. Thank you, brother. And then the last one I have is one of my personal favorites. Not everything is a threat.
Oh, nice, nice. They're my favorites too, especially the last one. Yes.
And it's funny because each of those, I can write like a piece on each of them. And I agree with you because we'll go back to, you know, the ego. If we think everyone's challenging us, we'll never grow. If yes. I was scared, you know, if I thought you were better than me, I would never get on camera with you, right? And it's like, no, we're not in competition. We're on the same route.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
So wow. I just thought that was important. Yes, sir.
The last one you mentioned reminds me of the book, The Four Agreements, where it says don't take anything personally. I think that's the third agreement. And yeah, it's not a fight. You don't need to be excited. Like, what did I do wrong? I had partners, it's often that. And it was confusing because even if I'm giving a compliment, or if it's a compliment, they'll say, what do you need from me? Often in like, something's a threat, like, exciting about things. And so, yeah. And I guess, unfortunately, well, things are things. And so maybe hopefully for them, they'll figure that out. But later on, I figured that out for me and why people behave that way. And I had to basically learn how to respond to it with empathy. Because when they respond that way, you probably seen those memes too, where people say, I'm going to mirror your energy. And I think sometimes it's applicable, but I think most of the times mirroring energy is not needed, because what I've noticed is when someone is often feel threatened, especially being in the food industry, I get heightened too inside. Even that's not my core, but I'll feel like, oh my God, there's a threat because someone else is stressful and someone feel like there's a threat around. And I had to learn to say, this is your prerogative, this is yours. I don't need it to be mine. So I don't need to mirror how you're feeling. I can be myself regardless how you're doing. So I love that part. And funny thing you mentioned about the less shoulds. You said less should and what?
More acceptance.
More acceptance. My previous, I had a interview previous to this. He wrote a book. It talks about how to stop shooting yourself. Shooting. And it's funny, whenever I hear me saying that, or whenever he said it, I've also hear how to stop shitting yourself. Mm. Shitting, it's kind of like plain words, because when you're shitting yourself, oh, I should be a man, or I should, at my age, do this, or this person should love me, or this person should have done that. You're shitting yourself. You're bullshitting yourself, because first of all, you don't own anyone for them to be doing anything for you or to you. And you don't need to shoot yourself based on society's mandates over you. Who says at 30 you need to be married and have 5 children or have a career of making 90K? You can if you want to, but it's not a should. So we had a deep conversation, and I love how you bring that up again. And that's awesome. Why have you reached out to the public to express yourself?
That came naturally. I've always had an inkling to speak. I think humbly, I'm okay at expressing myself. It's one of my favorite things to do. I like storytelling. When I was a student in high school, there was this one teacher that I gravitated to. And I was getting ready to drop out of high school. Like, I didn't want to go to college. I didn't care enough to write a paper. And I always remember her. So if she ever listens to this, Ms. Chia, I love you. I actually wrote her in my acknowledgments for my book. But the reason she changed my life was because at 18, I was struggling, right? I was stuck in that, who should I be? I don't know who to be, so I'll pretend. And then I said, you know, playing the character, school, right? I don't care about school. And I didn't write this paper. And I remember she pulled me to the side. She could have failed me. She could have moved on with her life. She said, I want to speak to you outside. She said, you're very smart. I've read your work. Why didn't you do the paper? I said, I didn't want to. She said, no, let's get deeper than that. Why? I said, honestly, I don't want to go to college. She said, are you scared? I said, I'm terrified. She said, go home and write the paper. We'll work on it together. I wrote the paper on Monday. I brought it in. She was like, yo, this is great. What the hell are you waiting for? And she motivated me. And I decided to take school more serious around senior year. I was still, you know, doing my stupid stuff, but it was the voice in the back of the head, that one teacher. And I was like, yo, if I could do that for one of these kids, or mind you, I also worked at the jail. So I'll tell you another quick story. I wear pink, right, at work. So in a jail, no. Sometimes I just wear pink shirts, right? And
okay.
And I don't mind, but a lot of people will say it's not a masculine color. So I remember talking to a young lady, and we only met for 2 weeks, and she wrote me a letter. And the last thing that she said to me was funny. She said, I may not leave gangs, but you taught me that there's another way out. And then at the end, she said, and real men wear pink. And when she said that, like, I'm like, I still have the letter, and I'm talking about 10 years ago. And when she said that, I was like, oh, my words are powerful. I need to use them properly. So that's where the whole, you know, teach and I'm a teacher in the real world as well. So I enjoy my voice and my ability to communicate information.
Great. And in that book, The Four Agreements, I think the second agreement is being impeccable with your words. And as you just mentioned, your words is powerful. Use it, can't quote it, but appropriately. Anything, because you've probably seen those people says, I'm real, I tell it like it is, and things like that. But then their words are daggers. They're hurting people. You can tell it like it is without attacking. Or you can tell the truth without being nasty and just tell the truth. And of course, people will take the truth however they take it based on their perception, but at least it comes from a good heart and not from a But if you just tell it like it is with an attitude of like, too, then it's not inspiring. And it's great that your teacher, and I've learned to do that because I've had roommates for a long time. Currently, I have four roommates, and I've implemented that in my life. And of course, when you're around people, as much as we don't want to, we want to, people, we wish they want to change, they change because there are certain things that bugs us. But what I focus on, I change myself and I implement things myself and I inspire instead of saying, hey, you need to change. And for the last 5 years, because when you move in, we have an interview and we have a expectation kind of a thing. But everyone goes by the book because they want to be there and the energy is great and we inspire each other. And even when something doesn't go well, instead of, and I like how your teacher did, she collaborated with you instead of saying, I am your dictator and you're going to do this, you're going to respect me and things like that. And I love that process. And I had to learn that my four teachers, my roommates, I'm grateful for them. And I tell them, like, I have no shame. I tell them, I love you. And I tell them, tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me how I can do better. Tell me how we can do this together because we're living together. I don't want this to be a place where you just sleep and you can't look at your roommates in your face. Like, I mean, you can do that if that's what you choose, but I think most people don't want that. They want to, when you see each other in the kitchen, we feel safe. And I'm grateful that I feel successful at it. Of course, as mentioned prior, it's something you keep have to work on to keep that vibe. And I'm so grateful that I actually practice that. And it's challenging because of ego, but the more I practice, I don't care for the ego men anymore. Cause I'm like, no, I'd rather have a relationship with those guys instead of having an ego about it. So I love how with the public speaking, your voice is really important. I post ads on Facebook about the podcast and some people reach out. And a lot of people who have religious trauma, and some of them, they'll tell me their story. And they say, my story is not so important. You probably need better stories. And I said, anything anyone has to say is important because the minute you are silent, and when they say silent is a killer, it's not an exaggeration. And people are thinking killer as in body, but it can be killer of anything. If you're silent with your singing, you're killing your voice or a career you could have had. Or if you're not speaking, you're killing your voice to speak or et cetera, et cetera. So I tell them, yeah, like it sounds boring for you, but if you actually tell your story, someone else who was shy would come up and say, this is my story too. And then they feel like someone else, what's that word? And it will inspire others to know that they're not the only one. So having your voice is really important. You know, Dr. Wayne Dyer, you heard of him?
Yeah.
Wayne Dyer. He said, with something that helped me, he says, do not let your music die within you or something like that. I keep killing the quotes. But basically he says, if you have I don't call them dreams anymore. I call them goals because I feel like, because I'm so specific with words. When you dream, you're so like, ugh. But when you're a goal, you have to be alert and focused and mindful. So I call them goals. So basically he says... Yeah, that makes sense.
I'll jump in just to add, like, it goes back to being impeccable with your word, right? You're creating your life in real time. If you say, my dream is so out there, I can't reach it. It's really out there. But if you just say, you know, I'm getting closer to being a public speaker, like, I'll tell you something interesting. I DM somebody. And I posted something like, I can't wait to be inspiring people on stage. And someone DM me and said, let me ask you a question. I said, what's up? They're like, why do you think you're not already inspiring people? And I said, I don't know. I don't see anybody. And he's like, you don't know what people are being influenced by. You don't know if thousands of people are seeing it just because you're not getting that one damn like. Like, I'll say something pretty cool. When I started my podcast last year, about 14 months ago, I interviewed Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., the son of the author of The Four Agreements. And I remember, like, when he said yes, I was like, wait, what? Him wants to talk to me?
So I know.
It's amazing what can happen. And that's for everyone, you and I included. Like, dreams are there and goals.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Wow. So inspiring. Which brings to the next question I was going to ask you. So tell us a bit about your podcast.
Okay, cool, cool. So my podcast, I'm proud of. It's like the way I see it is, and you actually said it, it was an informal conversation with a friend. I want you and every listener to turn it on. If they're going through something serious, they get a funny episode. If they need motivation, I want to put that fire in your ass. If you need prayer, I got something for you. If you like conspiracy theories, we have something for you. So I've tried to find eclectic guests, from hypnotherapy to, you know, witches to the law of attraction. And I just want everybody to share their piece, because I know everybody has wisdom. But I would say it's a search for knowledge. It's known as The Search for Consciousness, and it expanded with my story. And we've included a lot of different people. So I'm really proud of it.
Nice. And definitely all of you need to get to his podcast. When I was starting to listen to him on Instagram, and I don't remember if I asked you for the podcast link or if I seen it, and it was addictive, or I went on a marathon podcast, let's say. The next one to the next one to the next one, because yet felt like I'm hanging out with a friend. I'm walking down the street, or I was on the train and I'm listening to you, and you were in real time on the train and sounds and this. And I was like, wow, this is so different, because most podcasts is quiet, quiet and so formal. And yeah, I love the feel, and it makes it breaking down walls.
Can I be real?
Yeah, totally be real, please.
Nobody quote me, or you can quote me. I've never, ever listened to a podcast before, because prior to starting my own, I did not want to sound like anyone else. Uh-huh. So I didn't know what a podcast sounded like. So I just started talking. So the first few episodes, what you really hear is me struggling. Me, how do I do this? How do I turn this on? Am I cursing too much? Like, that was always on my mind. And you know, the earlier episodes are funny because you guys get to hear the beginning. I'm talking about.
I love them. Yeah, they were gold.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Humbly, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Continue. No.
It's just like, it's so funny looking back. Like, I was resistant to it. And I remember my girlfriend, she was like, you got to be different. And I'm like, who's going to listen to me talk for 30 minutes? And she was like, yo, you'll be surprised. And Zen, this is crazy, but this is true. The episodes with me alone get more views and listens than the ones with famous people. So I'm like, wait, kid, you're onto something. Keep going. Keep going. So it's been amazing. It's been a really cool journey.
Yes. And my friend Abraham, he says, because I asked him, I call him the amazing Abraham. And I said, why are you so amazing? And of course, people say they're not so amazing, whatever. But he says, because his music, when he makes them, is from his heart to whoever's listens heart. And your podcast is from your heart to my heart and everyone else's heart. And I think, and it's funny you say that. I like your solo stuff more than when, of course, when you interview someone, it's nice to hear their story, but I love your solo stuff because it's more, there's no third party, let's say. It's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. At least for me, that's what I'm gathering. So maybe for other people as well. So
I think that.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I agree. I really think it's weird to me. It's like, I don't get it. I'm like, I've been reading these books for years. I don't know. It's just interesting. I'm just going to be humble and accept the compliment. Thank you.
it's a journey. It's very interesting, definitely. Yeah, well, I also, besides having leg issues, I had speech issues where I used to stutter very badly. And people tend to ask me, what's my first language? I tend to say, okay, my first language technically is English. But my first language, if you want to go deep into culture-wise, I was born in Haiti. And so we speak French and Creole. But I stuttered so badly. So I learned to be fluent in English. But because I still have an accent, I still have to practice to not stutter, I'm not fluent in any language. So I had to be okay with that and be, okay, whatever, that's me. There's no shame, who cares?
You know, so, what I would say? You're fluent in energy.
Oh, yes, that I have. Because I would have work in the kitchen at 6 a.m. and I'm like, whoo! And everyone is funny. In the past, their comment used to bring me down because I've noticed, be impeccable with your words, it's voodoo. They would say, are you on drugs? Why are you so happy all the time? What is wrong with you? And then I would go shit like them. And then later on, when I accept myself more, of course, I don't tell them, fuck you. But I would say, like, as in thing, like, no. Like, this is me. If you don't like it, it's fine. And when I've done that, people silently respect me because I've noticed after the 2020 happened and then this year work is open again, people are telling me how, oh my God, I'm so glad you're back. I like your energy, how you quiet in the kitchen and how you're so calm because everything is like hustle, bustle, hustle, bustle. And I let people do that shit. I don't hustle, bustle. If someone's stressing me or pushing me around, I said, this is how I do this. Please let me do it. And you can do your stuff, like respectively. And they can hustle, bustle. And I did a job, not the first time, but the first time this year, where it was a last minute job. And I'm a sous chef. I can be a leader, but if there's a leader around, I let them lead, especially if it's on paper. So there is a leader there. And then that was his first day as well. And I've been working there for 5 years. And now most of the responsibility or shared responsibility going on my shoulders because everyone's looking at me as sous chef, you know the stuff. So we made it work. And he was, I think it worked because he's an awesome guy. Like, he's so awesome. And I told him, I was like, I just met you. I felt like I knew you for a long time and we worked so well together. Like, dude, you're awesome. But I think if he was like a big ego kind of whatever guy, I probably would still do the job, but I probably would be stressed because he would be someone on top of my head and he didn't know what he was doing. And so because I had all this responsibility on my shoulders, it was not stressful. And I was like, wow, it's interesting. I've already known it that stress is a choice. Mm-hmm. And how I need to keep practicing to not let other people stress me because I'm a calm person. And when someone comes around and want me to be stressed, and I need to also learn to not be defensive because I would be like, stop stressing me because I'm stressed too. And I'm like, I need to calm down. And so I just do my thing and keep doing my thing. And they can just be tired of seeing me being calm because I've seen this year how they tell me I inspire them to do things calmly. So staying in my truth without even thinking other people are seeing it. I've noticed even on Facebook, people are observant. They watch and they read things and your voice matters regardless who likes, press a like or not. Because I've talked to some people, they would say things that I've said years ago. And I'm like, oh, you didn't even like it or even say anything, but people are watching, right? Mm-hmm. Or how you make them feel, etc. So tell us about, if you would like to, how is it working in the school system when relating to what you do now, like your, what would I call it, spirituality, or what do you call it, journey?
I would say just mindfulness coaching.
Sure, mindfulness coaching. Okay.
But it's funny because when I first started, I don't know, right? Like I didn't want to say it has to be this way. I knew that I wanted to get in front of a lot of people. I knew that I could teach mindfulness. The law of attraction was something that I was using all the time. So now I consciously use it. So at a school, I got really lucky because I work for D75. So for my Department of Education people, they'll know that that means one of the roughest communities to work with, right? It's children with special needs. And we're talking about all levels of special needs, from students with emotional disturbances, right? Where, for example, anxiety disorder, or, you know, they have the depression. I also work with students with ADHD. And students with physical limitations. And, you know, it teaches you a lot about yourself. You look back and you're saying, like, why am I ungrateful? This kid has, for example, one leg and he's still happy. He's still able. So it makes you, one, appreciate, and two, you want to give back, because there's people that actually care about the things that you're teaching. And I love to see my students when they thrive, because they've been doubted their entire lives. So to see, you know, I love working with these people. When I first started, I think we graduated less than 20 kids. Last year, we had the biggest graduation of our class, which is 60. So to go from 3 to 10, all the way to 60, is a huge difference. And I think, humbly, mindfulness plays a role in the culture of the school, the way staff talk to each other, the way students see me handle my stress teaches them. And I have, for example, just today, a young lady came. She was very depressed. She was on a lot of different substances, illegal substances. And she came to me and she said, you know, I come to you because you're the only person that understands me. I know I graduated 2 years ago, but do you have any advice? I'm getting bored in school. The information's not good enough. So what I did for her is I gave her higher level philosophy. I said, don't read this baby stuff, you know, learn it, but here, get a little deeper. And I think, like, my experience, right, being judged outside of school helped me understand what my students go through. So what I've basically done is modeled my outside life with my inside life. There is no distinction between Steven Rivera and Mindful Wizard anymore. They're the same person. Like, my students call me Mindful Wizard at work. Like, it's gotten to that point, and it's a blessing. So I would say the first year establishing mindfulness, I would put the four agreements up. I would say the things like, have you thought about your day today? How are you feeling? And I would teach that to the staff. I've also taught meditation to the teachers in the building. So I think all that leaves little traces, and eventually the school has become calmer. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. I just want to add one more thing. We're probably one of the best D75 schools ever, like, because of the things that the staff have done for the students. Like, you'll come in there and you parents don't know the difference. They don't know that this is a special education school, because it runs like a gen ed school, general education. So that's how mindfulness has kicked in. It has slowed down anxiety. It has helped academics grow. It's done everything.
Great. That's amazing. And it takes the right person to work in that environment. And with proving with their experience, you're the right person, definitely, because not everyone has the strength, maybe, to call it, or even the right person, period, because I feel like could be a limiting thinking. But I noticed, maybe there's more, but I've noticed there are two types of people. You either born for something or with something, or you learn it to do it. And there's maybe other people in the middle. like some people who can write music or even let's say painting. Someone can, from birth, they paint beautiful paintings, and where they learn it from? Nowhere. And someone had to go to school to actually do the same thing. And I think this person needs passion to arrive to that person's level, because that person's born with it. And if you're a speaker or someone who's driven like you, you are born with it, and something has to just like cultivate for you to bring to your potential. I have a lot of plants in my apartment, and it's not in their natural environment. So I have to basically cultivate them in a sense where they can actually grow outside of their environment. And if I didn't do that, they would die. It doesn't mean like that plant is bad, but it's just, it's not cultivated. The soil or the water, et cetera, or the sunlight. So basically, I am so happy for the journey you went through, because clearly you're in a great space now. So that's awesome. And you are, as you mentioned, giving back to your community, which is part of, I don't know if you read the book, How to Make Friends and Influence Others by maybe Dale Carnegie. One of the ways how to make friends, or one of the, it's like an 8-hour book, audio book. He mentioned how to break out of depression. And that chapter, especially nowadays, is very taboo, because I've noticed a lot of people where either mental illness or their shortcomings or depression or anxiety or stress as a badge of honor. They say, that's how I am, deal with it, which is fine, deal with it. However, you want others to deal with it. Are you dealing with it? And I could bet they're not. They're just like saying, hey, you deal with my stuff, but they're not dealing with it, assumingly. So he's saying how to cure depression. And when I posted that, and I had a whole week about it, talking about it, and people were very offended. But basically, it's very practical. He says, one of the parts, he says, to deal with depression, or if you don't like yourself so much, or if you're in a rut, the cure is to serve others. It is in serving others that you will find yourself. And then it also talks about, how about if I don't know who I am? How about if I don't like myself? Or I'm so depressed, or yeah, depressed that I don't like who I am, but forcing it. And I had to make that practice with smiling in places that I don't want to smile. To force a smile, you're still practicing the muscle, kind of a thing. And then it happens in here, because like, I forget, there's a term, kind of like no to negative energy, not a negative energy, but like some energy has to be in the two, I don't remember exactly, but two things cannot be in the same space at the same time, kind of a thing. I don't remember exactly what I was reading, but it talks about you cannot be joyful and sad at the same time. One have to give. And I talked to someone else who's religious, and he brought up, you cannot serve two masters. That's another way. And it's like, it's the same thing. I think it's still, being a Jehovah's Witness, I still have a lot of religious or Jehovah's Witness principles that I apply to my life, but I'm not religious. I feel like it's all principles that you can apply to your life without the religion. Like you cannot serve two masters, kind of a thing. And that can apply, people might think it could be God or Satan, or it could be emotions as well, or other people, etc. So forcing to get yourself out of a rut or depression, and then eventually you'll do enough things where it's gonna be authentic and you want to be there.
And Zen, you've been great. I've had a good time talking to you. It was a good conversation. I didn't feel forced. Everything was smooth. So I just want to acknowledge you. You're a great listener and you ask great questions. So thank you for real.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you. And I appreciate you willing to do it, because I've noticed, I don't want to say I'm nobody, but I'm not someone significant enough based on societies to reach out to someone and for someone to to say okay. So when you did, I'm very grateful for that because yeah.
I think you're great. And just because society hasn't, you know, caught on yet, it's okay. It's all good. You know what I mean? The right people will say yes.
So what are the steps someone listening to this can take to be mindful and go on a journey of mindfulness? You mentioned five, but you say you had 10, or what are other steps? I mean, kind of like physical or mental steps where they can, from one that can lead to two, to three, and five.
I think that's a great question. I think the best way to teach mindfulness would be in a four-part way. It would start with self-awareness, self-management, relationship awareness, social management. Those are the four levels, right? And the hardest one is the first one, right? Who am I? Self-awareness. We talk about it. Learn yourself. Then you can heal yourself.
Yeah.
If you do that properly, you go on to step two, which becomes self-management. For example, I hate waking up early, so I give myself extra time to manage that stress. That goes into relationship management, because now I learn that if I'm late to work and my principal says something disrespectful, I'm going to get upset, right? So now I've learned how to balance relationships, and that segues to the last one, which is social awareness. You can't thrive in social environments every single time if you don't know yourself, right? And if you don't know how to interact with people, it's very difficult to be successful, right? We're in a global economy, right? Where you and I are meeting in the internet world. These things are happening, and I think people need to catch up to themselves. So to simplify the process, I would just start with self-awareness exercises. Now, for people that have never tapped into mindfulness meditation, I would start with 1 minute of just listening to sounds, right? Just sit down, close your eyes, and just listen to the sounds around you. That'll start to ground you. And then you'll start to listen to your thoughts, and then it'll get all the way down to relationship management. Another thing I want to say is that this is a process. Right. I've been meditating now 12 years. I'm 32. So it's been almost 13 years. So I see people that just started meditating trying to compete. And it's like, why? I've been doing this for a long time. It doesn't make me better or worse. It's just I've been practicing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing I would say to people. Don't compare. You're not here to say, you know, Zen is more calm than me. I wish I could be like that. You can look. You can reach out to Zen and be like, hey, Zen, how are you so calm? And then learn from him. But don't compete with him, because he's his own person. I'm my own person. And that's really my advice to people.
Right. Focus, and funny thing, say that again, focus.
I was just going to say focus on those four levels and just kind of like how to attack them.
Right. Definitely. And funny for me, I'm calm because I know nothing matters. And we make things matter, basically. Mm-hmm. So I just pick what I can make things matter. And when I say nothing matters, the right person will understand, as you do. It's not like I just don't care and things don't matter. It's just all the extra shenanigans don't. So mm-hmm. I'm just gonna have a peaceful time.
We're only here for a short time. That's why, remember when we talked earlier, I was like, we only got like 80 years, but might as well make the best of it, right? It's like a game. And a wise person will learn that with time.
Definitely. So how can someone reach out to you to learn more about you, about your work, and possibly join you in that journey of mindfulness?
It's a great question. You know, I've kind of created levels so that people can reach me in whatever way they want. If you just want daily motivation, Instagram's the best place. I do 6 posts a day at Mindful Wizard. If you want like little funny stuff, go to TikTok. And if you want higher level engagement, Like if you're a thinker and you just want to be fed, I would go to the anchor.fm/mindfulwizard, which is the podcast. And if you're a reader, I would go straight to Amazon, type in Musical Clues, which is a book about the law of attraction and rap. So you have a lot of different methods. You can also email me. I'm pretty open-minded. You can speak for that. If you email me or reach out, you know, if I think we're on the same page, I'll reach back out and we'll be all right. And I'm here to help. So just reach out and don't be worried.
Awesome. So you heard it here, everyone, from Steven Rivera. Again, thank you so much, Mindful Wizard. I appreciate you being here. And I want to remind everyone, as you and I talk today, if you have a voice, speak it, and do not be shy, do not be ashamed, and do not doubt yourself. Reach out to someone. I reach out to Mindful Wizard. And if I had all these negative thoughts and said, oh, I'm nobody, is he gonna talk to me? Then we would not have this conversation. And even if you're not reaching out to someone, tell your story, because your voice matters. And there's only one person that can stifle your voice, is only you. If someone else doesn't want to listen to you, someone else will listen to you. So whoever doesn't matter, doesn't matter. So whoever sees you matter, they'll make it matter. So thank you again, Stephen, and I'll see you next time.
Zen, you've been great. Thank you for your time, brother.
Thank you. Have a good one.
God bless, brother.